welcome to our Clásico La Liga weekly special. It's wide open. Just a couple of points separate the top three. We'll have an in-depth look at the Clásico. Which formation did Barca use? Answer, all of them. Real Madrid have lost at home to Cadiz, Alavés, Shakhtar and Levante. They lost 4-1 in Valencia, away to Shakhtar in the Copa against Alcayana, although to be fair, it was in the dark. They have beaten Barcelona home and away. They went away to Inter, and once they turned it into the crisis, they beat Borussia Mönchengladbach. Real Madrid win big games. Barcelona don't. Both Clásicos, Atleti, Sevilla, Juve, PSG, and of course, Cadiz. Now, Koeman wanted to blame the ref, but hey, Ronald, we English people are world-class at holding grudges, so don't expect any sympathy from us. 1993 is still too short a time ago. It's still too raw. Any argument that starts with the words, by the ridiculous standards of current refereeing, should be taken with a pinch of salt. We'll get to the penalty controversy in a bit. The silver lining for this weekend for Barca came from Christian Teo and Claudio Bravo. It's been a while, hasn't it? As Betis pegged back Atleti, who went crazy and actually attacked in the first 5 minutes of the game. Now, last week on the podcast, Terry promised his wife a thrilling Friday night and indeed delivered with Huesca versus Elche. Even better for Mrs. Gibson was that she didn't have to wait too long. Two moments of great excitement inside 4 minutes. News from what I think we can call the clear bottom six to come. Osasuna's John Moncayola says clubs need 42 points for survival. That's because he can't count. Terry is here. Now, the Patreons are watching us do this. So the Patreons will be waiting. Where's the shirt and tie that you had on La Liga TV?
Well, it's a Clásico, and I thought I'd join in the fun, but of course, Guillaume doesn't wear a tie.
Yeah.
Albert was dressed in a suit, so I did see them early during the day, so I thought, oh, why not? I must add, I had tracksuit pajama bottoms on the bottom, as most people do on Zoom. So it was a quick change throughout the evening. I was on before the game, back into my casual wear, and then got changed again, put the top half back on for the post-match programme. Okay. It was good to be involved. I've missed not going out and being involved in over a year now. So they have kept me involved. I'm back on again Wednesday, so I guess we're talking more about the Clásico and more about the future games coming up and the destiny of the title. So it was good fun.
Yeah.
And a good Clásico.
Wasn't it? Yeah, it was. Yes. I've seen it said that we needed a good Clásico. We always want a good Clásico. It is the centrepiece game of Spanish football, two of the world's greatest football clubs, two teams playing well going into it. So what's your quick verdict? Did the right team win it?
Just. I thought that the first half dominance of Real Madrid in the way that they play, there was a stage when it went 2-0 that I thought they were going to run away with it before half time. It was almost every attack, and Barcelona I thought were fortunate to get to half time with just a 2-goal deficit. And it was then that Koeman made changes and they did improve in the second half to the extent they almost deserved the draw. But I thought for 60 minutes, Real Madrid were comfortably the better team. The last 30, Barcelona came in strong, which I imagined would be the case because of the extra game that Real Madrid had during the week and the fact that Zidane is playing pretty much the same players in every game. We'll talk about the one change he made and the impact that had on the game. But I thought just Real Madrid just about shaded it. Barcelona did come in strong in the end. Both teams played, I guess, the way Barcelona played in the first half left them vulnerable to the way that Real Madrid played, which was slightly naive of Koeman. But in general, I thought Barcelona played pretty well. Real Madrid were good, very good as well. So it's not one of those Clásicos where you're looking and picking fault in one team and saying they were terrible and we can be really critical of them. I thought it was a good game. Both teams played well in their own, with regarding their own style of football.
So you mentioned the change. The one personnel change was obviously Fede Valverde coming in for Asensio down the right side. So when it came in, I thought, because he has played in a kind of advanced wide right role, hasn't he, when he's recently played Valverde. We haven't seen enough of him this season. But it was an interesting role, wasn't it? Because he was quite often, I mean, literally in the defensive line for a lot of his position. But also because of his physicality, he was able to get up and down. Was that crucial in the outcome of the game? Or did it just catch the eye because it was a relatively rare tactical tweet?
No, I think it was crucial. Yeah. I think because it would have been easy. See, bearing in mind Zidane has picked 10 of the 11 that beat Liverpool, that, you know, why make that one change?
Yeah.
You know, because Asensio played well against Liverpool as well and has been in good form and scoring goals. So there must have been a thought process where he thought, no, I'm going to need something different, because he assumed, quite rightly, Barcelona were going to play with the three at the back, with the wing-backs. He might not have been fully aware of the personnel until later on during the day, but I think it was a safe guess, wasn't it, to guess, you know, to assume yeah. they were going to continue with the three at the back. And he just thought that perhaps with Lucas Vazquez, who's a makeshift right-back, he isn't their first-choice right-back, far from it, that he might need help up against Jordi Alba with that side that he attacked for Barcelona. Now, if he can restrict Jordi Alba, it restricts Messi's, you know, options to continually find him out wide on the left in space, timing those runs late. And I thought it worked really well, because Valverde, there was times his starting position was interesting to me, because he made a back five at yeah. times. He dropped in at right back. And he was encouraging Vazquez, first of all, and then Odriozola to go and play narrow. So it effectively become that that fullback was part of a back three, central three-man defence, with Valverde playing right, Mondi on the left. And then what you have then is a player that, as we saw for the first goal, he broke forward. And it was a mismatch against Jordi Alba, who makes the wrong decision, then reacts slowly, having made the mistake when he committed himself to a challenge against Valverde. And then before you know it, Vazquez is flying down the wing on the overlap and then, you know, flashing across the face of goal, and Benzema with a terrific finish. So that was the impact. That's the big impact on the game from Real Madrid's point of view. Slightly fortunate with the second goal, of course, when, you know, any free kick that gets two deflections. We can be critical of the defending from Barcelona.
So is it fortunate or is it bad defending by Dest and Alba?
A bit of both. I mean, the deflection could go anywhere, so that's where the good fortune comes in, that the deflection on Dest goes towards the goal. Dest shouldn't be turning his back. It wasn't a particularly powerful shot. You need to, you know, he's not the first. He won't be the last player that jumps and turns their back on an attempt at goal from a free kick. Big deflection, and then Jordi Alba. It's kind of weird, because Jordi Alba's reaction time wasn't quick enough again to actually head it off the line, which he probably should have done.
Well, what's he there for?
Exactly.
Literally, yeah, the job, isn't it?
And also, I was surprised he did that, because if you look at the replay, there's other players then that see Jordi Alba drop in. And then I think Benzema was one who's clever enough to see that, as most forwards, when someone does drop in that quick on a free kick, you go in there with them and you can crowd the goalkeeper. So it's, you know, the two deflections probably meant that Ter Stegen was not going to save it, but it didn't make Ter Stegen's job any easier with the fact that other players were in his eye line. And so that was poor defending. It was, when you look at the there was no one, you know, they chose not to go with anyone behind the ball, which is fair enough. But there is a great action replay, the steal of it. And De Jong is ducking. The rest are not particularly jumping that high. And Dest is obviously the one on the end of the ball that turns his back. So that was poor organisation from Barcelona, and probably something that Koeman thinks he could trust his players with, instead of nailing it down before the game. But so that was costly. But Valverde played right back, right wing back, right sided centre back, right midfield, and right wing.
Yeah.
And I was surprised he came off, because I still thought of all the players, you know, he had the energy to still continue.
Yeah,
and he came off, and the game did change in Barcelona's favour slightly, and then Zidane had to make more changes, which were more obvious changes to make, because, as he said afterwards, they're running on empty, so that is an issue. They're going to have to, you know, rest up before they go again against Liverpool, before they go again next weekend, and if there's more Champions League games to come. So I think that's, you know, it's incredibly difficult. And it's a real slog now this season. I think worked out we've got a 10-month season in 8 months on the back of the end of last season.
Yeah.
And, yeah, you know, I've been guilty of saying these players are used to playing 50, 60 games a year, season, plus internationals, but they're not doing it in 8 months normally.
Yeah.
You know, we started, was it October? Going to end in May. It's about 8 months, you know, to get these 50, 60 games in. and it is becoming a slog. And I think that's something we're going to have to bear in mind when we all try to predict the outcome of the title.
Casemiro got sent off, obviously, clearly in contravention of the rules of the football. You're not allowed to send Casemiro off for two yellow card offences, but they did. And then the big moment then. So was there a penalty? Was it a foul by Mendy? It's on Brathwaite, isn't he? Yes. The ball's going nowhere, effectively. He's going away from the goal, isn't it? And Brathwaite races. He gets there just before Ferland Mendy, who then definitely, undoubtedly touches him. No doubt whatsoever that happened. The question then is, where do you start drawing the line for when a penalty is? So my view on that was that, and I understand why Barca are unhappy. I understand why you might think it's a penalty. But I'm sort of glad it wasn't, because the amount of times I see a penalty given for something that doesn't have to knock the player over. He's chosen to hit the deck because he's felt himself be touched. And I say, what a ridiculous decision. So then it seems an odd one to then react and say they should be give a penalty for that, when I don't think that's where the line for penalties should be. But I understand that as Koeman, you're looking at that and you're probably looking elsewhere. Literally, you can look elsewhere in La Liga this weekend and say, well, that was given as a penalty there and that was given as a penalty there. So why don't we get that? So what's your verdict, Terry? Penalty or not?
100% nailed on penalty for me. Right. And I'll explain why, because a little tug. If Mundy had chased Braithwaite from directly behind him and they were running in a straight line, I would agree with you. The contact is minimal. But my point is that the ball was just going to go. Braithwaite was trying to stop the ball from going over the line. So he was bending his run and running from left to right. So you're balanced, because he couldn't go in a straight line because the ball was going to go out of play. So he had to run around the ball. So he's going to turn from left to right. And as he's doing that, in the action of doing that, his left arm gets pulled as he's trying to bend his run back towards the right. If you're running in that manner and someone pulls your left arm sideways, which was the case, you're going to go over. Definitely wasn't a dive. And I thought it was an act of panic from Mundy. There was a near miss, wasn't there? I think it must have been a save. I can't remember exactly.
Was it after the bar? No, the bar was the last thing, wasn't it?
No, the bar was the last thing. Someone was through. I can't remember it was. They had a shot. It was a save. It went to the side. And Braithwaite was bending his run to try and keep the ball in play. So he's not running in a straight line. Bear in mind the conditions as well. So that it does play a part, because there's no accusation of Braithwaite diving. I think he's flipped as he's turning to go to his right after making the run to the left. His balance is in a position where Mundy grabs his, just enough to grab his arm and throw him off balance. And I thought, I must be honest, when I saw it happen, I thought the replay penalty, VAR is going to look at that. He's flipped him round. It's not, I agree with you totally. If he'd been running in a straight line and Mundy had touched him in that manner and they were both running in the same direction, not a foul. But because he was trying to turn right, and someone flipped him, Mundy flipped him with the left arm, trying to do this for the people that are listening as well as watching, that it would throw you off balance when you're trying to bend your run towards the right. So that's why I thought it was going to be a penalty. The interesting aspect for me is the criteria for how they come to these decisions, because it looked like they didn't give it any value, any worth, if I'll be honest. So that would be why Barcelona are so irate, that they don't feel it went through the proper procedure. Referee check, the referee go and have a look and make sure. Then that might have dampened the argument theory. But the fact it just went, nothing happened, did it? I'm sure VAR checked it. But I think it was one of those, it was important enough for the referee to go and check to make sure that he gave it the right, you know, the right procedure was adhered to. Sometimes, I'm sure VAR check, they check everything. But it doesn't, at times, to us that are watching, to the players that are playing, where the referee doesn't, you know, go and check it, or there isn't too many obvious, you know, holding the finger to his ear, then it appears that, you know, perhaps they're not checking it. So for me, I thought it was a penalty, 100%, because of the manner in which he was trying to run, how he was trying to keep his balance, and just got flipped as he went to turn left to right.
Would that have been a penalty, in your view, would you have given that 10 years ago? So that's not a question.
I would have done. It was an act of panic for Mundy. It was foolish. It could have been costly. But there, you know, there's, I think that it's enough, more than enough of an infringement. And Braithwaite definitely didn't flop. He didn't dive. I think he was just literally knocked off balance by the left arm being tugged as he was trying to turn right in a position where the pitch where he was trying to, it's the angle of the run that's led him to being knocked off balance. And because he's knocked off balance by a foul, there was a similar incident yesterday in the game between Villarreal and Osasuna, where it was given as a penalty and then it was judged to be outside the box. It was exactly the same.
Yeah.
A little tug as a player was going from left to right. It was enough to be a foul. The referee gave the penalty. Eventually, VAR found it to be...
They scored.
Outside.
And, yeah, they scored and then they ruled it out, didn't they?
Yeah. So, yes, exactly. So, there were, for me, it was a penalty. And I understand Koeman's complaints about the time being added on.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if the referee's equipment breaks down for 2 or 3 minutes and you only get 4 minutes added on. But I would say you've had 90-odd minutes to score the goal. Why with another minute? You know, I know goals get scored in 60 seconds of play, but I don't think that's enough to blame the referee.
And crucially, he definitely fouled David Platt when Platt was through on goal.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course he did. And stayed on the pitch and scored the free kick. So.
But that was in the rules then, wasn't it? That was in the laws of the game, wasn't it? It was a free kick outside the box and England didn't score from the free kick, but he didn't get sent off. Yeah. I think that led to a change in the laws of the game, didn't it? It was always high profile cases where you think someone suddenly goes, that's not right. He can't rugby tackle someone. Because it used to happen all the time and nobody got sent off during that time. It happened to me. You're through and goal, someone just rugby tackles you and they got a booking and you got a free kick 40 yards out. So there was a period where something must have happened. And I won't be surprised that case was the one that made people think, this isn't right. So Koeman wasn't doing anything against the laws.
I don't know. Unsportsmanlike. I mean, I know we've now turned into old Englishmen moaning about past decisions.
But... I'm sure England players did it at some stage.
Yeah, but
maybe not as obvious as that one.
Kevin Moran was sent off in the cup final. What, 85?
Yeah.
For a foul like that, wasn't it? So, like, but anyway, this is you know, all the people in the rest of the part of the world.
And people argued about that.
Shut up! Yes, go back to Real Madrid, Barcelona. So, last quick question: I think this is a thing, isn't it? I mean, you look that I gave that list at the beginning, at the intro of the games that Real Madrid have won versus the ones they've lost, which are the weirdest contrast of games won versus games lost, and. Barcelona have a problem, don't they, with these big games? Is it inexperience? Is it just their level is not quite there? So why do Real Madrid win big games and Barca don't?
Well, Real Madrid, I've said throughout the season and probably other seasons as well, Real Madrid have a problem getting motivated early in the season and against teams that they think they can beat. It's in their makeup. When it comes to this stage of the season and they're battling on all fronts, Champions League and stuff like that, and then fighting for La Liga title, they don't have come good. Mm. You know, they have the players, they have the quality, they have the experience, and then they have the motivation. It's ridiculous, some of the games they've lost this season, and deserve to. I mean, there have been some really poor performances, but when they have to step up, they do. So, you know, it's not a surprise to me that they've suddenly... They look a really, really good team again. And, you know, even even a week ago, I think it was, when they played, seems like Eibar, they weren't great, but they won. We keep saying that and they keep winning. But then all of a sudden, when it comes to Liverpool, when it comes to Barcelona, they were top-notch, top-class.
Actually play well and win.
Brilliant, yeah. And look, a team now that, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6, 10 weeks ago for most of this season, you wouldn't give them a prayer winning the Champions League.
Yeah.
I'm not predicting they're going to win it, but I'll tell you what, they've got a chance.
It's
going to be tough against Liverpool, but, you know, then they play City, I think, is it, in the semi-final?
Yeah. I think. Is it? No, City the other half, I think. Should we check that before we... so their run is 5 wins, 2 draws, 6 wins. That's their last 13 games, which is incredible, isn't it? Right.
They're good form. But they rely on Benzema. They rely on Modric and Kroos. They rely on Casemiro. They rely on... But just not forget, they've got Ramos and Varane to come back. Hopefully Danny Carvajal. I have heard that, I think I've read that Lucas Vasquez is out for the season, so that'll be a blow. There's a small group of players that he trusts. He needs them to be fit, and that's going to be tough because, as we'll talk about one or two of the other teams in La Liga, the other title contenders in Atletico Madrid, you know, this season, as I said, is a slog. I can't believe it isn't going to have an impact on Real Madrid at some stage.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I'm sure we're going to talk about Atletico soon.
Well, let's do it now, shall we?
That season is having on them.
But so they started well, Atletico. I mean, we advertised incorrect advertising, Terry. We said don't bother tuning in till half time of this game. You'd have missed the best of it, wouldn't you? Because Atleti scored early, Betis equalized through Christian Teo. And then, I mean, it was a fairly even game, I thought. I think both goalkeepers made good saves. And for the second week in a row, Atleti missed late chances that could be very, very costly. I'm seeing loads of people on Twitter, for example, saying that Atleti got no chance in the title race, but they are top, aren't they, still?
And I liked what I saw last night. I have much more, if I was an Atletico fan, I would have much more hope after last night's performance than recent performances. Mm. The situation suits them again now. They're in a real fight. Their backs are against the wall. I thought they were really good last night. And we have to look at the missing players. It is a factor. I mean, if you was to take similar quality out of Barcelona, similar quality out of Real Madrid's strongest 11, they'd find it hard. Mm. So when you think that they're missing Luis Suarez, main goal scorer, Marcus Llorente, possibly their best player this season, they're suspended. Lamar gets injured not long before the game starts. João Felix comes off injured just after half-time. Kondogbia was injured. Trippier goes off injured. Mm. And you saw the spirit that they showed. I thought it was classic Atletico spirit in that game last night, from the first minute to the last, backs against the wall. And when I saw Simeone's interview afterwards, that would give me hope if I was an Atleti fan, because he was upbeat, he was positive. He wanted to win the game from the first few minutes, you know, from the opening minutes of the game. And, you know, the only thing that disturbed me was his love for Correa at the end of it.
Yeah.
He said this, it was a great interview. He was upbeat. He was, you know, sporting in terms of how the game went. Both teams, were could have won it. A draw was a fair result. Glass half full rather than half empty. It was really upbeat. And he said at the end of it, he said, but I'm really, really disappointed. I'm really upset that Angel Correa didn't get his goal because he worked so hard and he did this and he did that. And I'm really upset that he didn't get a goal. I think, mate, that's your infatuation with Correa. He's got no choice to play him at the moment, but his infatuation with Correa means that somehow he starts him in most games. And if he doesn't start him, brings him on after half an hour like he did at Sevilla. So I think there are players, unfortunately for Atletico, the chances are falling to Correa. Last night, in fairness, I'm not going to slaughter him. Well, half chances. He does work hard. I don't think it's always guided in the right place.
Yeah.
Last night, he should have been the focal point of attack because Carrasco had to play up there in the second half because João Felix came off and they were running short on numbers and bodies to play. So I thought, you know, the players that don't normally play, Vitolo and Torreira, came on and they worked hard. So I would have hope if I was an Atletico fan. They are top. Let's not forget that.
Yeah.
And it's a real fight now between the top three. It would be easy to say because Real Madrid beat Barcelona, they're now favourites. Because Atletico have been playing poorly, not picking up wins recently, it'd be easy to write them off. It'd be easy to write Barcelona off because they got beat by Real Madrid. The last day, I hope, the last day, if all three teams have still got a chance, and it could be like that at the bottom of the league as well. So it should make for a really exciting running.
Yeah, because we've still got Atleti Barca to play, haven't we? Which is another potentially huge game. Of course, they're not necessarily they don't always work out to be huge games, do they? Because you can get a draw in it and then we're no further forward. But we'll see. I think my fear, I think everyone's fear for Atleti is what you said, is that basically that long list of injuries and illnesses that we end up looking back at this, how far they were clear in January, and say that they just got done by injury and illness. They weren't able to stay the course. And then I suppose
they had the COVID outbreak, didn't they?
It triggered it, didn't it? Triggered the period of bad results that they've had. And now to regather that momentum for these remaining games is a tough one, but it's not impossible, like you say. You know, there's
Shell played better. His best game.
Yes, he was.
Ages,
yes, he did. Yeah,
he was good. So he sort of epitomises that position that Atletico are in. He's got to fight back from a poor run. The team have got to fight back from a poor run. And Jimenez was incredible last night. That block he made to deny Betis the winning goal towards the end of the game when he ran from one end of the pitch to the other. I saw the usual traits we see from Atletico. Despite them not getting the win, I saw enough to give Atletico fans hope that we're up for the fight. Maybe two or three weeks ago, we were complacent. We were a bit sloppy. Now, that's all gone. Start afresh. They're clear at the top. We know we're in a fight. And you're going to back at three teams in a fight to win the league? I can't go against Atletico. I really can't.
Are you still saying Atleti?
I'm going to support and back Atletico. Not right. Support as in, go out and start wearing me Atletico and put me all black suit on next time I'm on Viva La Liga. But no, I think they've that's the only thing they've got to focus on. Barcelona have got a Copa del Rey as well next week. You know, Real Madrid, if they beat Liverpool, going to have two games in the semi-final of the Champions League. They'd be going towards the final. That could be three extra games. So Atletico game week by week by week. You know, they can concentrate on La Liga. I'm hoping João Félix isn't hurt badly. Suarez and Llorente will be back next week, so it's they've got a good chance still.
Yeah. Okay. Let's have a look at the best of the rest after a very quick break. Welcome back. Let's have a look at the best of the rest. Although, actually, Saturday wasn't really the best, was it? Only literally two goals before the Clásico. More goals in the Clásico than the rest of La Liga that day, actually. We'll go down the bottom. I think Colin Miller from Football España put it, basically, there are four leagues now in La Liga. There's the top four going for it. And then the European battle after that. Sevilla probably a little bit of their own, aren't they? A mid-table group. Now, the argument there is where that starts. Obviously, Moncayola says 42 points. I mean, how are we working that out, mate?
It's just Europa League.
Because I think Osasuna are now... I mean, they're not safe. You can go down. If they lose eight games, they could go down. But it's a tall order now, isn't it, for them to go down. They can. I understand... It's a psychological process not to relax. I get it, but his numbers were a bit out. So we're looking at the bottom, aren't we? Which is essentially where we are now. Let's if I look at the table up while we're on.
And just going back, Real Madrid play Porto or Chelsea. Real Madrid or Liverpool against Porto or Chelsea.
Yeah.
So it could be Real Madrid Chelsea. So
going back
to earlier when I thought they were playing City.
Yeah, so it's hard to say the right side of the draw, isn't it? Because you never know, they're all good teams at this stage, aren't they? But yes, right. So I'll just let you know what the table is. We'll share this with the Patreons. There we are. If you want to, it's patreon.com/LTEL. If you want to, or obviously, if you're a podcast listener, get your own table up on the computer. That's all I'm doing. It's not, I don't have any special access to anything. I just got in fact, I'm on the BBC site and I've got the table up and I've shared it. So in terms of the form guide, the bottom three, as it now stands, none of those have got a win in their last, five games in that form guide. So Eibar are bottom and in big trouble now, aren't they? They are sinking. Alaves and their new manager got a goalless draw away to Athletic. And then Elche are the other team who are in the bottom three after losing at Huesca, as advertised on Friday night.
So let's get this right. John Moncayola, who I think is a really good player, scored a good goal, really good goal at the weekend.
Bad mathematician.
He thinks Elche are going to get 16 points from their last eight games.
Yeah. And not just that, also from where, so Osasuna are 14th. So Valladolid would have to get, they would have to get 15. Huesca would have to get another 15 and Getafe would have to get 12. All those teams would have to get to 41 points at least. But Osasuna to go down on 41 with his safety mark at 42. Anyway. So how's it? Because you did your numbers a few weeks ago, didn't you, Terry? And you so, but since that, obviously a Huesca win against Elche is big news, isn't it? In that relegation battle, Cadiz winning away to Getafe, also big news, isn't it? That David Timor own goal, so huge steps into mid table really for Cadiz, as with Osasuna who won away to Villarreal. Huesca are still in it, but two wins. Rafa Mir again with a brace, and they're looking much, much better off than they were certainly two weeks ago.
Oh, yes. I mean, I'm looking at the bottom of the table. I'm still going to bear in mind, I look at the points per game ratio. So LJ, who I think are the team with the biggest hope down the bottom, despite losing to Huesca, I see enough from LJ to think they're going to pick up more points than maybe... Certainly Eibar are really struggling at the moment, and big games, tough games coming up for Eibar. So it's hard to see too much optimism for Eibar and the supporters. Alaves, a slight improvement against the jaded Athletic Club that decided to make loads of changes at the weekend. I was disappointed with the performance of Athletic, actually, because a lot of the players, it's kind of hard because a lot of the players haven't played much under Marcelino. They're good players. And by throwing them all together, they all weren't up to match speed. You could have put two or three in and they would have been okay. But when you had a whole group of new players that haven't played much football lately, it showed. So Alaves were unlucky, a couple of goals disallowed. Fantastic header from Hosselu that was disallowed. I mean, a classic centre-forwards goal if ever I've seen one. So Alaves, slight improvement on recent games under the new manager, of course, Calleja, but still weren't able to get the win. Valladolid keep giving away late goals. It's three consecutive games on the trot now.
Yeah.
And full credit to Granada, you know, dug deep again. That motivation, enthusiasm must come from the manager. A great group of players to come on the back of losing to United and probably their European run coming to an end. You could have kind of forgiven them if they'd been below par. When I saw, you know, you see Valladolid take the lead and you're thinking, I kind of expected this. You know, they've got United again next week. But they didn't. They reacted, they rolled their sleeves up, everybody played a part. And that enthusiasm and jubilation when they get the winner shows how important this game was to Granada as a general La Liga game of football. Diego Martinez said it's incredible that they got 39 points, played 30 games again, and eight to go, and only their second season back in the top flight. And suddenly Dungeon in then, actually, what a good job they're all doing. So... I think it's going to be tough for Eibar. Alaves is interesting because of the new manager. Elche, I think, have hope. Valladolid are chucking away points left, right and centre. Getafe, the one should be worried.
Terrible result, isn't it?
Yeah, and you look at the goals scored.
Yeah.
22 goals in 30 games. And they look short of any confidence. Again, Bordalas makes changes where they're not playing their traditional style. There was a player, I think it was Kubo, who was playing off of a striker at the weekend, but the lineups, it was Alenia. Alenia was playing off of Mata. Kubo was playing wide on the right, Kukure on the left. And, you know, Kubo was taken off after 50 minutes for Angel, which is an admission by Bordalas that he got it wrong and he should have played with two strikers up front. Alenia went to wide again. But wherever they tried, they just ended up scoring a goal. So Getafe, they're the ones. Osasuna, fine now. They don't need another 8 points. I still think, I actually think another couple of points.
So where's your mark? So you could go down on 34. Like I say, if they lose all their eight games now, they could go down, couldn't they? But
yes,
you're looking at that, aren't you now? I think realistically, there's a lot of teams, a lot of 6 pointers yet to come. So there will be a the points per games that they've got currently will improve a bit because they're playing each other, so they have to.
I think that the cut-off point now is Osasuna. I don't think personally they're involved. Yeah. It was such a big win. Such a big win for Cadiz as well. They're safe. Valencia are going to be safe. Yeah. So I think Getafe, Huesca, Valladolid, Elche, Alaves, Eibar are the ones in the relegation fight. And Eibar have the biggest problem, obviously, being bottom and not playing well, not scoring goals.
Tough game.
Another one who got 22 goals. Tough games as well. Yeah. It's going to be tough for Eibar to survive. That'd be my favourite for the moment to go down.
Yeah, I'm afraid. So. Yeah, I agree with you. I'm afraid. So the one game we haven't talked about was Valencia 2, Real Sociedad to, I mean, interesting game, wasn't it? Real Sociedad were a couple of goals up. Valencia had two penalties. The first one, Carlos Soler with the no-look penalty. No luck, no hit the target penalty. Genius. Then he was sacked for VAS, wasn't he? And then Gabriel Paulista with a really good header to equalise. Maxi Gomez sent off at the end. Do you agree with me on that second penalty? I thought was just a coming together. I think we've got to a stage now.
Carlos Fernandez.
Yeah, where almost every challenge now, certainly ones that are going to be looked at by the VAR, you think, right, which way is he going to give that as a foul? Which is ludicrous, because obviously if your first thought is who's fouled who, it's probably not a foul.
I mean, not
every contact is a foul, but I think we're getting there.
Yep, I agree with that. Carlos Fernandez, he actually treads on Paulista's foot, doesn't he? But he doesn't bring Paulista down because Paulista's already down, sliding in and making the challenge on him. Yeah. As they're coming together. So, I thought that was incredibly harsh, I have to be honest. And I agree with you. I was thinking, well, who has fouled who on this one? And it was a penalty. And Vass was able to tuck that one away. Carlos Soler is normally reliable on penalties, missed his. I'm not sure why Maxi Gomez got sent off. It wasn't clear whether, you know, obviously he got the yellow card for the aerial challenge.
Gobbing off, wasn't it, I think?
It didn't seem too bad to me. He was gobbing off to the other players, I thought, to the opponents, which the referee sometimes has to look and think, they're calling, you know, they're giving each other grief. They're sledging each other. Let them get on with it as long as it's not on me. But he wouldn't let it go. But he said 10 minutes ago, they were down to 10 men. Good fight back from Valencia. Real Sociedad were rampant in the first half. I mean, they were excellent. And Guevara gets his first goal in La Liga.
Yeah.
Good young player, really good holding midfield player. So surprising to see him pop up so far in attack and finished. He took his goal really well. And Isak with a smart finish as well after Paulista misplaced back pass. So Real Sociedad from a 2-0 lead, you expect to win the game. And the fact they didn't will be disappointing and a big blow for Alguacil because they need the points. You know, their season isn't over. And then they've won the Copa del Rey, last season's Copa del Rey. They've got to make sure they finish back in Europe again next this season because they are a team that should be representing the Liga in European competition. But there's a challenge now with Betis and Villarreal. Granada, the next team down, are quite a bit way off the pace. So it's a straight fight between those teams now.
Yeah, yes. And because it could be three European places for the league, couldn't it? Depending on what happens in the final. Right, I think we'll leave it there then, Terry. So enjoy the Champions League and Europa League games this week, everybody. We'll be back for a regular podcast next week. If you want to join the Patreon fund, it's patreon.com/LTEL, and we'd love to see you there. Thanks very much, everybody. We'll see you again soon.